So what's happening in Mexico with this new guy, Roxy? What were you going to say about him?
Well, I'm going to go back again. Like, this is a big, big change in actually human history. It's like a major change was going on. And we don't see anything about it in the media. Nobody's really commenting on how important these things that are happening between Russia, well, the Soviet Union and America are. They're really like major changes in human history. And the only ones sort of recognizing that are the LaRouche pack. And they're giving credit to Trump for this big change in geopolitics. And instead of really recognizing what's happening, mass media is just defaming Trump and Putin. And this is a tactic of the empire that they have been using for a long time. And there's one of the expressions of that big change is what is happening in Mexico. And many people say the fact that the left party won shows that we can hope for the first time since Babylon, according to LaRouche, to win the battle over the empire that has been controlling humanity, trade and finances. And instead of having a goal for progress, it's always been profit, but it's important. And it's sort of weird because, like Diane Sayer says in her great summary, the fire chat that Ed Long published on Iron and Bob. She says it is really absurd that everything is sort of reduced to money or to finances, and it cannot be. That's why things are so so fucked up, because we're now in a situation where we have the negative interest. And, the whole finances in the world are being fed or kept alive, according to LaRouche, by this black economy based on drugs and trafficking of people, guns, and whatever, other things. And they need this to keep the bank system alive, because otherwise it will be already since a long time ago obsolete and dead. It will not be sustained. And so now it's not like we think just having a new president is going to change and fix everything, but it shows that a lot of the agenda that was being implemented by these neoliberals has been stopped, and many things had to be aborted. And since maybe 20 years, Mexico has been experiencing like a type of opium war. And the amount of debt and violence produced by that is really beyond what you can imagine. You know, the things that have been happening are really horrific. Like in many areas, people are looking for it's hard to talk.
Well, that makes you emotional, what they're looking for. Well, there's a lot of you. Anybody who does anything in Mexico City, any kind of leadership is immediately killed, regardless of how old they are.
Yes, it doesn't matter if they're leaders for ecology or for anything.
Yeah.
Any leader is disappeared and killed and... like he was justifying that he voted for the left government. A friend of mine is like, I didn't vote, so I already sort of lost hope in things changing in Mexican politics. So I was really impressed that this happened. But a friend of mine said he looked at documentary or an article, something like that, about children looking for dead relatives. And it's like, he was like shocked, like, how did we end up here?
So the children, they are looking where, and they're doing it this
yes,
week?
No, in many areas of Mexico, there has been a lot of violence and people disappeared and nobody knows if they're still alive or dead. And
so it's part of the children's consciousness to look for their dead, murdered relatives.
Well, no, the people are just looking for graves, mass graves.
Yeah.
In many places, and they found graves with hundreds of people. In many places, but a lot, everywhere.
Yeah.
So, since the earthquake in October, that shook society, really, not only physically, it's like something happened. Like people became aware that the government is not reacting. And they organized themselves. And I have a lot of friends in Mexico City, my brother, my sister. They were reporting to me what was going on. And it was really inspiring. But the people organized themselves, and they were not expecting the government to react or to do anything. On the contrary, like all the money that was donated for the victims just disappeared. Nobody knows. It's like it has been robbed by these corrupt people. And now people are expecting to find out what happened with all that money, but...
with the new government.
Yes, so people were donating their force and food and medicines and helping each other. And
not expecting anything from the government. They ignored the government.
Yes, on the contrary, like many medicines and... on food, they put like messages for the victims, just to motivate them, and also to mark the things because the government was confiscating the donations made by the people,
yeah.
And then putting them in boxes by the government and saying they were spending millions on these things that were, it was not true, it was the things donated by the people. So it was not government help, but they were like confiscating the things.
Yeah, they claimed they were part of the process, claiming they're helping.
Yes, and they go and take a picture with some destroyed building, and but that's it. But the people knew what was going on. And I think that really provoked that in these elections, everybody was telling me, everybody went to vote. But it was such a, so much people voting against the party, the pre, that this time they could not manage to
cheat.
Yeah, to cheat, to, like always there's a fraud. But it was really impressive that everybody went there and voted. And my brother was in one of these places where people was voting, and he said, you could see the all these people, sick people, anybody. It was really impressive. And so some people analyzing politics said, this is really amazing. It's a major, major change, because what is happening in Mexico is going to have repercussions in the whole world. And what's going on in America is America is also under attack. And you are also like in China, in the middle of an opium war. You know, with people, you are in a major crisis of addiction to opiates. And this same thing that you see with Trump happened in China. Like, in the 19th century, they were, the British Empire was pushing opium in China. And the emperor wanted to stop trade with England. And in the media, this emperor was portrayed as an idiot that lives in the medieval times and doesn't know anything about free trade and freedom and whatever. And so the emperor of China wrote to Queen Victoria and explaining the effects of opium in his country. And he said, would you allow such a substance to be sold in your country? And, of course, he was portrayed as an idiot, and public opinion was manipulated into thinking that China was a country with a stupid emperor and full with addicted peasants. And so they lost the opium wars because in the army a lot of people was addicted and they could not fight the empire. And so the British decided that they wanted these independent islands in Asia, like Hong Kong and Shanghai. Mm-hmm. And they established the banks to control this big corporation that LaRouche called up, Inc. And LaRouche, in this book, worked with 100 people, and they did a metanoia, like a looking back of these trades on drugs. And they really explain in an amazing way how through the money gained by this trade, the corruption at all levels in many areas was financed, like in politics. And from this trade, all the many, many other problems came to be, and this is why Trump said we were going to clean the swamp.
Yeah, drain the swamp.
And he declared war on drugs because only 20% of the drugs coming from Mexico were confiscated by the government. And it is clear that there is no real law enforcement in many areas, and there is not only the traffic of drugs, but only also weapons and people. And this is the problem with immigration that is affecting really a very deep way the European countries. And it's not like people is racist and they don't want people from other countries. It's just that they don't see that as a solution. The solution will be that people will be able to live life with quality, progress in their own countries. It's not the point to, like in Spain, there's a lot of people in debt, and some have to commit suicide because they are called desahuciados, like they have to leave their houses and everything. And the government is giving money to the immigrants, but not to the people. And this is also happening in France and in Italy. So the people don't understand what's going on, how come they work all and live in their countries all their lives and they're not getting any help. And these migrants are being helped. So it's not helping the country or anybody at the end.
So you're saying that the immigration issue is a big business of trafficking humans all over the world, and those, just like the Dope Inc. cabals took over different governments in Latin America, the immigrant trade is making somebody very wealthy, and they're buying Italy, German governments, and making...
Yes, because all these black economy trades are linked, you know, prostitution and pedophilia and illegal immigration.
Yeah.
And this is what Trump is fighting. It's not all like, okay, some people may be racist, but it's actually, if they want to clean the swamp, they have to stop all these different areas of the black economy, because the black economy is financing terrorism and financing many situations that actually stopped the government, for also in America, of creating real progress. Like, instead of investing in infrastructure, education, having goals of, you know, that are really good for the country. Like Trump is, that was one of the things that I found very interesting, that he was saying, why do we have to fight all these wars and spend trillions of dollars in countries that doesn't even like America?
Right.
And so this is this is the situation now, that we're in the middle of a major change, where for the first time America is working with China and with do you still call it Soviet Union or Russia?
No, Russia.
Russia. Yeah, it's the, I'm so used to say Soviet Union.
Yeah.
It's now Russia. Yeah, it's not longer that. But yes, it's like, it's really impressive that the media is not talking about that. But for the first time since antiquity, humanity can really change the things.
Because there's so many.
How things have been going on, and actually start to work for progress for everybody. It's like...
Now, this is what LaRue says China is doing. And LaRouche says that he and Helga have been consulting with the Chinese government since 96 and putting these ideas out. And Diane Sayre pointed out that for the first time in a long time, there's peace between Eritrea and Ethiopia. Now, she was very impressed with that, you know, in Africa. And she said, if you ask Americans, what do they think of Eritrea and Ethiopia? They'll say, well, who are they? I think they're people. They don't know their countries. It's like the quote I played from Zappa at the beginning of the show. Zappa says Americans know nothing. They only know what's in their neighborhood. They're really numbed out. So LaRouche's, they monitor what China's doing. And the reason Eritrea and Ethiopia have a peace is because China's coming in, giving them all kinds of money for infrastructure.
But it's everywhere, also in Europe.
Yeah, they saved Deutsche Bank. China saved Deutsche Bank.
Yes. Like I told you, all of a sudden there was a list for to get food for 10 days.
An email to the citizens. Warning.
In the media, they said everybody had to get food for 10 days, and they gave a list of what you needed. And everybody was like, what?
Why?
Because I suppose they were expecting that there was going to be a meltdown of the banks.
But that's about a year ago.
Yes, when you got restructure out.
Okay, that's when it happened?
Yeah, because I remember I'll survive with restructure.
Right.
And then nothing happened, but then I knew that from that year, in February, the Chinese had actually bought the Deutsche Bank. Mm. So they saved Europe.
Right. And Ion talked about last week, back in January 2010, about the role of Deutsche Bank, and Deutsche Bank would not collapse, but Germany would, but not the bank. And then he said they were bankrupt. And nobody understood why he was saying that, because Deutsche Bank was still here. Well, they limped along with their fake stuff about Greece and all that, and then they got built up by China.
Yes, because, like, according to Pierre Jovanovic,
who's a solo commentator in French TV, he would be
he publishes many books on many topics. But he also explores the mystery landscape because he had an experience where somebody tried to kill him and he saw the bullet coming like in slow motion and he was not killed and he thinks some angel helped him. But he actually was into writing about technology, computing, for many, many years for the major magazines and press in France. But then he saw what was happening in Wall Street when the in 2008.
Yeah.
That Bob and Ion provoked this.
Yeah, me and James collapsed that. Yeah.
Yeah, the collapsing of that and the trade, the market went to 7.7, and that was for him like a sign of things that he started making patterns with the Bible.
With the number 7.
He wrote a book called 666 and then another book called 777. And he start to see how things that were put in the Bible were sort of showing in the economy. And it's really interesting how he makes these connections.
Yeah.
And he also, his last book is called The Effects of the Printing Press and Hitler.
Mm.
And he says the printing money, this money that is no longer money, it's just debt, is not backed by anything since the 70s, is provoking the negative interest and the fake news and everything is fake. And he says the the printing of this type of fiat money had the effect of creating Hitler, because during the Weimar Republic, they were printing a lot of money that had no value, and they didn't care. They were just printing more and more and more. And Hitler saw that the banks were actually robbing the people, and some of his ideas, actually, many people, it's like we see in the media that he's just like crazy. But some of the things he said were actually accurate about the banks.
You talk about Pierre Jovanovich?
No, about Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
We never really get to listen to what he was saying or what he wrote or the people around him. But some of the things were actually accurate about he was against banks. And if you go back in history, anybody who says anything against the banks is then also defamed and portrayed as a crazy person, a dictator, and whatever.
Anti-Semite.
Yeah, some of the things he was saying were actually right.
Well, what does Jovanovich say about the economy in France, which is really in trouble? What's he saying lately about it?
Yes, that there has been a lot of privatization of,
yeah,
like the airport and things that are supposed to be part of the heritage of France. Like you see, for example, DJs doing parties in Chambord.
In the castle.
In the castle.
Yeah.
And like Beyoncé making a video in the Louvre. Like they need money, you know, like they're renting
this institution
artworks to the Louvre in Abu Dhabi. They say they lend it for I don't know how many years.
Right.
But
so
like,
the French are very, you know, obsessive about their culture. So in America, yeah, people will have parties and museums, but you're saying that in France, these sacred institutions are being turned into brothel parties, which is
unprecedented. Yes, because if you know about Chambord, like, yeah, I've been studying Chambord, it's like really, it was an attempt to build the temple.
Yeah.
You know, like
500 years ago.
Yes, and the stairs in the middle were made by Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, it's like a major treasure of the whole humanity. It's a really amazing place for many reasons.
Now they're renting it to DJs.
Yes, like, yes. And another thing that is really upsetting is that they're making changes in the law so they can take the money saved by the people for their retirement. And yes, because they need to save. The government has no money. And they're looking where they can get money. And actually, Macron approached China and Trump because, yeah, there is no way out. And
right.
Nobody is recognizing that Trump is actually looking for solutions. You know, like, there had been problems that had been around for a long time ago, and they are actually to be kept like that, you know, like terrorism and drugs.
Yeah, not solved.
And the division of the world in like a Cold War situation. And now Trump is finishing that. Like, he said, okay, we have to stop all those things and start creating real progress, real profit, not only for the banks and some elite, but for the people. And that's going on in China and in Russia.
Yeah.
And that's why he is so defamed in by the press. And
right.
We don't hear about this major change, but I will recommend that everybody watches this video with Diane Sayer.
Yeah, which is on Ann and Bob right now.
Yeah, maybe you can also make a summary here for the record about what she's saying, because it's a very good summary about what's going on.
Yes. So you see a great potential in Mexico, because the guy that won had run twice before and won, but then the majority establishment canceled the elections because he won.
Well, it was not really only canceled by the PRI. It was canceled by America. I mean, how could America allow the neighborhood country to be socialist?
Right.
You know, there is this Cold War mentality, and in the 60s there were all these countries in Latin America where the socialists were winning, like Chile,
yeah,
Cuba, and other places, and the CIA implemented a guerrilla, and these governments were taken out,
yeah,
because America could not allow these governments in America, in the whole continent. Cuba,
right,
was an exception. That's the thing.
Okay, so this guy, he won over the last 10 years, would you say, or just 5 years?
12, because each president is there for 6 years.
So he won 12 or more years ago for the first time. Then he won again, and that was it. And he became mayor of Mexico City. And then after the earthquake, which created this whole populist groundswell of cooperation among the people and sort of the classes, at least some of them, and that feeling got translated into this election.
Yeah. Yes, because people got to see, like, they were taking their power back.
Yeah.
And that they can really change things.
And then you see, since you're from the upper classes, you see your upper class old friends from school, your history of your life, they're all panicking. They can't take the peasants having this kind of political power in Mexico.
Yes, because there is a very strong colonial mentality that is reflected in everyday life and the way people talk, and people don't even see it.
In themselves.
Yes, like they really believe not everybody is equal. There is a lot of racism. And they don't want to lose this status, this feeling of being superior to other people. And even the way the jokes, the way they talk reflects this colonial mentality. And
so you posted some high class woman saying she's supporting the People's Revolution, and you posted that, and you lost a whole bunch of friends because you did that, Mexican friends.
Yes, there is an actress called Jesús Rodríguez, and when the results of the elections were known, many people went to the downtown central Mexico City. There is a huge plaza called El Zócalo,
mm-hmm,
and everybody congregated in that area to celebrate, and of course many celebrities went, and this actress was filmed by somebody, and she was saying Mexico is an ancestral thing. It's like, it's more than a country, and it cannot be destroyed. Like, the roots of this culture are so strong that even though we have been suffering bad government in the colonial times, it's so rich that it's still somehow there. And because I posted this woman saying that, many, many high-class friends decided they don't want to be my friends anymore. And we had discussions and fights. Because I'm not saying everything is going to be easy, but I would tell them things like, you should start by not using some words and treating people in a different way and things like that in everyday life that show this colonial mentality and that it has to stop, it has to change. We cannot be divided like that anymore.
And now you're all alone.
No, because other friends, I have other friends.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised by the reactions of some people. I didn't know they were so conservative. The thing is, many were really scared that Mexico may become like Venezuela.
Venezuela, yeah.
That, you know, now there's not even food and people are really suffering. They cannot leave the country. They have no dollars, so they cannot buy anything. And they're, like, scared that all that could happen in Mexico. So that's their...
It could happen. Could it happen?
Well, it depends on many things. It depends also on how the American government deals with this new situation. But
what did Trump say so far? Has he made a statement about it?
Yeah, actually, everybody was surprised because he didn't react it like, you know, he's portrayed as an idiot and as a racist and
yeah.
this and that. And they were expecting that maybe he will invade Mexico or there will be some major problem. But he actually said he was looking forward to work with this new socialist president.
Right.
So that's something, you know, that just the fact that he is not following this Cold War
script
prejudices, yeah, that he's not reacting like people were expecting him
right.
to react, like maybe invade Mexico or something will happen. This cannot be allowed, and it's not happening until now.
Okay, so let's. Hey, Greg, what do you think of what's going on in Mexico?
That was just the introduction because there are so many things going on.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that. But I just want to see if Greg, since he's a guest here too, a guest co-host. So, Greg, what do you say about what she's saying about Mexico and your own North Korean communist leanings?
Well, I tried to find information about this new leader. I mean, I knew it was coming, it was looming, and it was being talked about quite a bit in the media. I wouldn't go so far as to say it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to win, but it seemed like the media was preparing itself for that possibility, that they kind of knew that, well, the jig was up and that, that you know, something was going to change there. And they, I suppose, felt that they had very little power. Well, it isn't worth them talking about it in the United States because ultimately they kind of realized they don't have much power over what's going to happen. So, but you know, I looked into it to see about this man and what he stands for and so on. I mean, I realize that it's a huge shift in politics, but and I wonder also whether this delay in the North American Free Trade Agreement is partly due to seeing how, what kind of situation that they're, that both Canada and the United States are going to have with Mexico now, and what kind of relationship they're going to have. I mean, Trump's talking a lot about having bilateral relations. You know, in other words, they're going to have relations with Mexico, and the United States will have relations with Canada, and then Canada can have relations with Mexico, and vice versa, whatever arrangements can be worked out. Whereas the elites in, I suppose, Mexico, the United States, and Canada, and beyond, perhaps, they want to have everything linked together. And so whatever Trump is saying is would appear to be dangerous to the elites. They need to have everything locked down. When you, for instance, if the United States has a bilateral agreement with Mexico, in a sense, it allows the United States to do things with Mexico and maybe opt Canada out of whatever relationship they might have with Mexico, or diminish it to some degree. For, I would imagine that, I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine that the big infrastructure or trade business that goes on with Mexico is agricultural. More and more we see Mexican food products in Canada. Well, will the United States work a deal with Mexico where maybe not so much of the produce will come to Canada? But we'll have to find other ways of getting essential food supplies. I don't know.
Go ahead, Rachi.
The main economic partner of Mexico is the United States. Most of the things go to America. Then the second is the whole of Europe. But the, America may buy the whole production of avocados or the whole coffee or whatever. You know, they, like, consume a lot of things, so the economy depends completely on what's going on in America.
One would say that situation is going on right now within the North American Free Trade Agreement, that the produce comes from Mexico into the United States. It more or less would have to. I mean, I suppose some of it might be shipped by sea, but I doubt it. Doubt that there's much of the foodstuffs. So therefore, stuff goes to America and then gets brokered out of America. Maybe that's going on now and that will continue on. But maybe there are direct shipments from Mexico, Mexican suppliers, directly to Canada through the United States, where they'd be locked vans, right? They'd be, have locks on them that would not be opened until it got to the Canadian border. But as Roxy was saying, could it be the plan of the United States to be the intermediary between not only Mexico and the American business operators, but also between the United States and Canada, because most of the stuff has to go that way anyway? I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Yes. The thing is, it goes beyond the countries. It goes to the corporations and to the empire, like LaRouche says, because this big trade that moves the black economy is really, really amazingly organized, and all banks have to do with that, all governments. That's the complexity of the problem, and that's why people were so moved about what happened in Mexico, because they say it's amazing. They're winning over the corrupt, the cartels, you know, it was not only winning the elections. It was like a big battle against all these
death squad,
the black economy.
Yeah,
the trafficking of people, guns and drugs, and the violence and all these.
You know, Greg, over the past year and a half, I've learned a lot about Mexico from Roxy, and about a year ago, I started saying, there's something about Mexico. It's the heart of the evil, if you want to call it evil, in the world, the black economy. Mexico, ridiculously killing everybody, all the gang fights. No other culture seems to have what's going on in Mexico. So it's right beside America and maybe represents the underbelly of America. So if Mexico gets affected, and what do they got? A city of 30 million people. And it's considered the, what was it, the last year, the worst country in the world? Or the second worst country?
No, the most violent.
The most violent.
The amount of deaths and killed journalists and violence is more than any country in official war. So
right.
Mexico has been under, really, like, suffering an opium war like China and America. And the thing is, yeah, like you said, why is Mexico important? Because we have the biggest border with America, and everything goes through Mexico. That's the thing.
Yeah. So Mexico is, the McLuhan angle is you put a barbarian or a pre-literate, pre-industrial culture up against an industrial culture, maximum abrasion and interface happens at the border and violence. So you got this big part of North America, its underbelly is Mexico. See what I'm saying, Greg?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mexico is part of North America, or the wealthy part of the world, and it is the bad side of the tracks, you know, in the old metaphor in small towns. It is the CIA, the mafia, the FBI, all that corruption is shown in Mexico because it's an extension of Washington. See what I'm saying?
Well, Mexico, going back into the 1930s, was destined to become a socialist country. Its tendency was in that direction. And because the United States did not want that to occur, and that's why I believe that you've seen what Mexico has become. It's by all means possible, it was to either stop it from becoming a socialist country under the, under the auspices of the Soviet Union, although that's debatable historically because of Trotsky, the relationship of Trotsky in being in Mexico. Mexico, or Trotsky, thought that Mexico was ripe, and that's why he went there.
Right.
And so the tendency has been seen by some people. Now they say that Trotsky was murdered at the ordering of by Stalin. Now I don't know whether that's true or not, but what Trotsky and Stalin's difference fundamentally in terms of the socialism being enacted in other places was that Trotsky wanted to delay the advent of socialism in the Soviet Union in favor of going off and having it being done in other places. And this was a bone of contention, as far as I understand it, between Stalin, you know, the direction and why you have the Trotskyist faction to this day and a difference with the Marxist-Leninist analysis. So, but
Trotsky wanted to continue the revolution internationally, and Stalin said, no, we're just going to develop our country.
Well, he didn't want to delay it in Russia, in Soviet Union. He wanted he didn't want to go, what, are we going to wait for everybody else to come over and then we'll do it? No, we can't do that.
Right.
In other words, Trotsky was advocating for continued engagement with the capitalists.
Yeah.
So that, because he didn't want, you know, the thing is that he sort of wanted to sneak socialism in, sort of under their noses. And Stalin just thought that was the most ridiculous idea imaginable, to not proceed, with communism or on the road to communism in the Soviet Union. He thought it was absurd.
Yeah, with their potential. With their potential. Why wait for what happened?
Right. Why wait? Why wait? And take the risks that were involved in waiting and having to engage with the capitalist and imperialist elites. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to have to really make too many concessions. Although we can see that he was prepared to engage to a certain extent where necessary with certain elements, you know, not only the British and so on, but also with the Germans, with the Nazis.
Okay, so Greg, LaRouche in the 70s did a lot of books on this. He had been a member of the Socialist Party in America in the 50s. He knew about the Trotsky line, and he knew about Stalin. And he was not pro-Trotsky or pro-Stalin, but he saw what Stalin was trying to do, and then he would explain why it got sabotaged by British intelligence and all that. But he was not fooled by Trotsky. He was more practical. So you get a really good detailed history of all the players on both sides, Trotsky versus Stalinists, in LaRouche's books in the 70s. So I learned a lot about that. And he was very good at pointing out what Stalin was right about and what Trotsky was wrong about. You know?
The leader in
LaRouche would be, he was seen as a guy who went right wing in the late 70s. No, he didn't go right wing. He went anti-neoliberal that was coming
right
in.
And, right. I mean, the more you know about LaRouche, the more, and I'm not an expert, but he had a right to know and talk about, to take on the subjects he did because he had experience with it. I mean, I suppose he'd been a Trotskyist?
No, he was in the Socialist Party, which was a Trotsky faction. Now, Ralph Shulman, who I've talked about here, was the Trotsky part in the 50s. He and LaRouche were almost roommates in the Socialist Party in the 50s. Shulman hooks up with Bertrand Russell and gets lost in the British-European investigated Kennedy assassination and stopped the Vietnam War, and LaRouche, his buddy, goes in another direction so that 10 years later, LaRouche is saying that Bertrand Russell is the most evil man in the 20th century. That's Ralph's buddy. Now, when I met Ralph in New York in the 90s, Ralph was still a Trotskyist. He was still talking about it and having little cells and teaching it. And he was a heavy conspiracy Kennedy researcher. So it was interesting to meet and know the two guys who were the best minds to come out of the 50s socialist culture of the United States. And they remained divided since then. Now, LaRouche is still going, and he's working with China, and Shulman is nowhere. He's been isolated in San Francisco.
Can I just get back to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So the Shulman, the Trotskyist thing, I heard a lot about it from Ralph and a lot from LaRouche, from their points of view. That was a faction in the American communist and left and socialist world. But there were other factions, and some of them defected and started the neoconservative movement.
Yes, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, they're called the Bukharinites, I think.
Yes.
B-U-K-H-A-R-I-N-I-T-E-I, something like that. Bukharin.
And again, you can see why Stalin and Marxist-Leninists have an objection to the Trotskyists, because we see what they end up doing. They're